Hello.
Hey, Patrick. Hello. Mike here.
Hey, Mike. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
We had some technical difficulties, but we're back. And hello and welcome, everyone, to the SUAS News podcast series, where we interview newsmakers and discuss the news and applications relevant to the global unmanned systems technology community. And we'd be welcoming Gene, but he called me 2 minutes before the start of the show and said he just got called out on a search. So it's all fun and games here at the control board. And, of course, updated my operating system, so it all goes to hell. But anyway, how's it going, Mike? How you doing?
Great. Yeah, well, Gene has to do what he has to do, right? I'm glad he's out there helping people out with those search and rescue stuff. He's just up the road from me, so it's outstanding.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. So, we want to talk about, the title of today's show is After the Drone Rush. And I want to kind of talk about, we've got plenty to talk about, but kind of finger on the pulse of what's going on, what's really going on with the business of drones. But before we get started, maybe you can introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your bio and how you got, involved
where I'm at.
in this unmanned aircraft thing.
Yeah, of course. First of all, thanks for having me on. I've been quite a long time listener, and it's cool to be finally on here talking. But I like the podcast and the information that comes out. It's kind of what's really going on instead of hype. So it's very interesting to me. But it is my background. After graduating from the Air Force Academy, I was an Air Force pilot for 21 years. I flew 7 different kinds of aircraft all over the world, deployed here and there and everywhere. And ever since I retired, I've been working with Frost & Sullivan, basically a market research company. So I assume that I'm trying to remember exactly how it happened. I got the drone market laid in my lap because of my ISR background in AWACS. I was pretty much the only person who had airborne ISR, and that was it. And I was flying the airplane, not really conducting the ISR. But I knew what was going on, understood it. And so basically, obviously, start off with the military market because 5 years ago, that's where the market was. But as that's really leveled off, at least in the U.S. side, I've been tasked with moving over to commercial drone stuff and civil. And I'm responsible for trying to keep track of pretty much everything that has to relate to full stack. So platform, sensors, software, post-processing, anything and everything that has to do with drones, I'm trying to keep track of it. And it's overwhelming, but it's fun. And so, during all that time, I also got an MBA. So I'm trying to keep track of what's going on with the financial aspect of everything as well, too. But again, like I said, and as you can understand, pretty overwhelming trying to keep track of all that stuff.
It's very fluid. So you spent some time in Colorado Springs.
I did.
Yeah, it's a nice town. Now, the funny thing is when I worked for the Army, the Space and Missile Defense Command, the Battle Lab, I was in Colorado Springs. And everyone's like, oh, you got to get over to the academy and check it out. Oh, God, the chapel's cool and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, I got, And you get busy and never made it over there. But I like
Colorado
Springs.
It's all great from the outside. All great from the outside.
Oh, cool.
No, it was a good experience.
it is. And that's Colorado is another place I could live. I liked it over there.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice place. And I don't know if you're a member of the Alumni Association for the Air Force Academy grads. I'm a member of the chapter here in Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
Just kind of fell into it. great bunch of guys, and they have a good program I go to every year. Anyway, I wanted to dive right into the mystery that is the current climate here. You did say you are correct. It's kind of overwhelming. It's always been fluid, but this deal is getting weird as far as I'm seeing it. What do you think?
Well, I kind of agree with you. I don't know that the 3DR stuff was much of a shock. it just seemed like they were barking up the wrong tree for quite a while. I mean, Solo was late in the first place, got a lot of cool features and stuff, but even then, even with all the money that they had, it didn't seem like they were marketing it very well. And then with that, as soon as they announced, and I think you and I have talked about this, as soon as they announced they were moving over to Enterprise so quickly and so kind of, you know, with no fanfare and without any warning, you knew that the consumer side of their business was pretty much not working. And, you know, that has a lot to do with the competitors out there. There's a lot of, I mean, you know, the Chinese market is, or the Chinese makers are flooding the market. So it's, if you're trying to build something that the consumer is going to use right now, and you're behind the park curve, you're done. I mean, there's no chance, I don't think, for anyone to come in and do any kind of business in the consumer drone market that under $1,500 range.
I could even, yeah. You know, I mean, I've known Chris since when he got into drones, and the whole 3DR do-it-yourself. You know, to be honest, the do-it-yourself thing, there were already autopilots. There were people doing things. I will say kind of brought together a community that was more of the programmery type of crowd. I told them I thought that crowd would get saturated and saturated quick because a lot of people don't have the, let's say, time and or wherewithal to program and horse around and do all of this for free. Plus,
right.
You know, we've gone back and forth over that, the open source thing. You know, it's nice. I like the Parrot model myself. You can run their software or open source software. You know, when it doesn't work, you can go back and, you know what I'm saying?
That's a pretty smart company. Yeah, I like a lot of what Parrot's doing. I know they announced that they were going to have a little fewer sales. And that's another thing. If it's fewer sales, they say less revenue. That doesn't necessarily translate to fewer sales. That may translate to lower price per platform sales, which Sean Reed, you know, openly said over a year ago that it was going to be a bloodbath. I think were his words in the small drone market. He saw it coming, so he's been prepared for it. And I think it's going to be kind of a rather than a numbers game, it's going to be a price war game.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, the thing I like about Henri is, you know, Henri's a business guy, you know. I don't think he was under any, like, false assumptions. You know, I've talked to him about what he's doing. He's got other products. They have other product lines. I mean, you know, they have their headphones. They have other things that they make. They have the Bluetooth thing for the car. They got all this other stuff going on. So he's
right.
In that space, but he's got other
things going on. It's not a one-trick. Yeah, it's not a one-trick pony, and you can't be, and I don't think, in the drone business. If you want to keep growing, I mean, the fact that they have – I've seen several reports say, oh, if you want a pure drone play, you know, here's Parrot as a stock. I'm like, that's not a pure drone play, not even close. I mean, that's what, 30% of their income, something like that?
Right, and so, you know, you've got you're diversifying in different fields. So, I agree with that. Now, you know, the 3DR thing, I will agree. You know, I think the hype. I mean, really, you know, I saw Chris at this SBIEF a couple weeks ago, and I talked to him, and that was a great show. The Chinese are still, you know, one of the people that I suggested come to the show and be there actually got funding. It's happened before. The Chinese are still investing. But so I was surprised to see Chris there. After the thing, I came up to him. I said, hey, Chris, you know, you want to give us an interview, your side of the story, you know, or the 3D robotics. And he accused me of not being fair. Now, I have tweeted out some things like what happened to the $100 million. I'm kind of like at the Greg Allman story, you know, with the whiskey bottles and the crashed cars and all the rest of that. And $100 million later, I don't feel that it was unfair. I mean, the historical knowledge that I have of 3DR. I mean, I could go and have a field day that'd make Forbes look like a bedtime story. But anyway. was like, okay, well, you know, go give it to somebody else. And, you know, I mentioned, I'm not going to mention who I told him to give the story to, but then I realized I forgot she got fired for incompetence from the company anyway, so that might be a sore subject. But these people that are supposedly analysts or reporters or whatever, they're all rah-rah pieces that are basically marketing. And anything that's even seen as remotely critical gets you on the poo list. And, you know, I don't know, whatever. I just think that I don't think that the Mexico play worked. I don't think the hype play worked. And, you know, the gimbal being late was just a disaster, you know, for the solo,
yeah,
as far as I was concerned.
Well, and then I'm sure it wasn't cheap to try and move all the manufacturing over to China so they could compete with the pricing. So
yeah,
that's,
well,
another,
I mean,
problem.
There was a big move by Mexico a few years ago to say, hey, we could compete with China. Come to Mexico. You know, you can manufacture here and you can drive it across the border and it doesn't, you know, take that long to get here. Yada yada yada. I was never buying that one. I'm just not buying that one. The Chinese model is just, as far as manufacturing is concerned, a whole different kettle of fish than Mexico.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, there were a couple of things, and we can speculate about that. I am, you know, since then, Chris said he's going to do an article with us. Maybe after today's podcast he won't, but whatever. I don't really care. My thing really is he should come clean with the community and talk about, you know, some of the stuff that happened. There's a lot of people out there, I think, that would just give him a pass, you know, and say, well, you tried.
Yeah.
We did all that. Don't be so pompous. Come clean. Yeah, we made a few mistakes. We did say we had the smartest drone in the world, all the rest of that stuff, and it didn't work out. And I think people would give him a pass. But there are a lot of people that are upset, too. You know, they feel taken advantage of, yada, yada, both sides of the deal. I don't really care either way what the guy wants to do. It's up to him. But I don't see Enterprise working.
I don't either. And I kind of agree with you. I don't think anybody there was set out to. No one set out to fail. You know, like you said, I'm sure they made some mistakes. It's not like it's a 100-year-old business where people know how everything works. You know, and it's you're gonna win some, you're gonna lose some. I was going to say enterprise-wise, though, I sent a tweet out about this. I mean, with Intel jumping in the game and Ascending Technologies, I mean, they're going to have a leg up on the Enterprise. That drone can already do more than most because it has a lookup capability. So if you're talking about infrastructure, you know, it has redundancy with 8 props. It has just so much more built in. If they can get their Intel marketing machine going, it's going to take everything else to task or every other option to task with regard at least to the infrastructure inspection is where I see the growth, because at least in the U.S. the 107 rules, Part 107 really allows for that quite a bit more than, you know, a lot easier to do those kinds of applications, whereas, you know, the monitoring and the long distance beyond visual line of sight night kind of stuff is still going to be further down the road, but that little niche right there with the inspections and you know, tower inspections and you know, infrastructure, bridges, and any kind of those things, we're going to see some growth there. But again, it's one of those things where I don't know if we discussed this before, but maybe me and Colin Snow have, but it's, you can't just go buy yourself, at least from my mind, you just can't go buy yourself a Falcon 8 and start yourself a business of inspecting. You have to know what needs to be inspected, how it needs to be inspected, what checklists need to be followed, what the rules are, what the regulations are. So these guys who think they're just going to go out there and start this these inspection businesses are kind of, I think, off the beaten path. To me, it would be smarter for people who already do those inspections to integrate drones into what they do, rather than someone who doesn't know how to do an inspection to take a drone and try to do it.
Yeah, well, you're banging on the drum that I've been hitting for a while. One, you know, the money, I think, for drones is going to be in, you know, public and private asset management. Two, drones have always, and this has been my experience since getting into this in the early 2000s, augment already existing businesses. I talk to people all over
right.
the world all the time about this deal. Talk to a gentleman today. He's like, well, how do I, you know, how do I market myself? And I said, well, what's your expertise? You know, well, I have a lot of experience in construction. He worked for a major retailer and building stores, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, that's what you have to play up. You know, so you're gonna be against, you know, Joe's Drones. And Joe's Drones, the guy, he doesn't know anything about the business, and he's going to go out there and take photos of what's relevant. He doesn't know. It's the same thing I've been saying in some of these articles. It's like, you know, I'm a roof inspector. Do you know anything about construction? No. Do you know anything about roof assemblies? No. Do you know what you're talking about? No. Are you a map maker? I'm a map maker. You're not a map maker. You're some guy with an app, you know. That's not going to stand up in court. There's just all these problems, and you know, even you go and you talk to crowds of people and you say, hey, you're going to need insurance. You're going to need, you know, you should probably, if you're going to do inspections, errors and omissions and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, oh, man, all that's expensive. And what do you mean I need workman's comp? Yeah, it's called business, Coolio. You know?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how this thing works. But we'll go ahead.
No, I agree with you. The get rich quick schemes, people are overlooking a lot of things. I mean, we don't have any kind of, well, some countries do, but the U.S. doesn't have mandatory insurance. That's just around the corner. I mean, you get a few suits that are, you know, millions of dollars in liability, and then all of a sudden you're going to have the insurance underwriter saying, okay, you're not going to get insurance unless this, this, and this. So I see that becoming mandatory, and that'll be an additional cost. The market here on the commercial side is so nascent that we haven't determined all the costs yet. So it's very hard to say that you're going to beat what is already done cost-wise with a drone. Now, odds are you can because it's very inexpensive to operate, but you have to work all those things out first. And like you said, I totally agree with you on the augmentation side. It's going to augment what's already there. You know, agronomists are going to include drones in what they already do in areas where it can be, the data can be better or improved or gives you more information than what you already have. You know, that's just an example.
Yeah, there is that. Now, the other thing is I think that some of the hype has been damaging. Like, okay, so I was at that, again, at that SBIEF thing, and there's some guys there that have a smart moisture sensor for you know, industrial or, you know, big farms.
Uh-huh.
Talk to the guy, farm drones, and they are just like, you know what, these drone guys are, the way they think of farming is demeaning. You know, coming out here and thinking that we're just going to need pictures and we're just like rubes. And I go, oh, yeah, the overalls, the wheat stalk and the straw hat. And he's like, exactly. And he says, I just can't figure out how these are going to work. So it's like kind of like the hype is like pushed out into the field, which was kind of one of my concerns that we would have almost an industrial dirty diaper that, you know, the real people are going to have to come back and deal with. Okay. So he tells me, I talk to the guy, he says, well, I just really can't see how this is going to work. Yeah. You know, you hear crop stress, blah, blah, blah. It's too, you know, we all know it's too late when you're crop stressed. All you're getting is bad news because there's no coming back from that. You can't come back and sing the corn a lullaby and then, oh, hey, here we go. So I told him, I said, well, the way it's going to work, you know, here's your product out in the field. You could use the drone, fly around, take some pictures, maybe use one of the apps and upsell your existing product and say, hey, Farmer Brown, you know, or Green or whoever he is, our sensors would work to help you here. You know, from walking the ground, I thought we needed 10. From the air, I can see we need 17. You know, and then come back at the end of the harvest, the pick, whatever, and say, okay, well, here we are, blah, blah, blah. I go, I don't think you're going to charge him for this data, but you're going to make more money upselling him your product. That's how it's going to work. I think that's how it's going to be for the fertilizer guy, for the irrigation guy, for, you know, maybe even, you know, the application, the pesticide guy, blah, blah, blah. It will be part of your service, and you're not really charging extra. What say you?
Yeah, no, I agree. In fact, I did a report not too long ago. I think you saw it. Fairly inexpensive report from my company, anyways, that talks specifically about UAS agriculture services. And I didn't estimate a market. I think it would be sort of irresponsible to estimate a market. What I did was provide like what if analysis, saying what if the technology is adopted at this rate or at this rate or at this rate, and as the rate increases, obviously the income increases. But that's the thing, we don't yet know how quickly that is going to be adopted, because it's going to take a while to figure out what can and can't be done, or what additional information or what better information you can get from a drone that you can't already get from satellites or from manned aircraft. You know, everybody talks about how expensive manned aircraft are. Well, they're not really that expensive when you have a bunch of guys willing to fly for very, very cheap,
right.
and or build up their hours, because the FAA just increased the hours requirements for right seaters in the airlines. So it's just, there's a lot of different things to have to consider. So it'll all work out. I think, like you say, I totally agree that it's going to be an augmented thing. It's not going to be a bunch of companies out there specifically doing precision agriculture. I think it's going to be agriculture companies adding drones to their line of services that they already provide, and have it all integrated into one big precision agriculture system, you know, whether it be John Deere or, you know, Case or whoever is putting those systems together.
Right, and I already think a lot of these companies have bad tastes in their mouth from dealing with chuckleheads, but, you know...
That's probably true, yeah.
Well, they do. I already know they have. I mean, these people have been to the show, you know, the expo, the Small Unmanned Systems Business Expo. They had these companies, some of these companies we've talked about out to do demos, and it was just a failure. Just
yeah.
A horrible failure, you know. It's too bad. But anyway, I mean, you know, you get the wrong people. That's another thing with this business is everyone, you just, you know, buy a selfie drone and 6 months later you call yourself an expert and people buy it at face value. It just boggles my mind. It just,
yeah,
you know, oh, or, you know, I get into arguments with people about search and rescue. I have this thing. Don't, you know, you are not a SAR expert because you went to Best Buy and you bought a consumer drone. And
right.
People, oh, that Egan guy's a jerk, he's a dick, whatever. Hey, you know what? When you're talking about people's lives, you know, and you don't know what you're doing, that could possibly mean people are going to die because you're a jackass. And that is not good for the industry.
Not accessible.
At all,
yeah.
Or anybody. It's
yeah.
Not for anybody. I got a cell phone app. I don't care, you know. I don't even want to get down that road. But anyway, the thing is, sticking with this theme too, and I wanted to talk about some of the other companies. You know, what do you think is a bigger threat to Karma? You think it's the Mavic? You think it's the Solo being blown out at $399? I mean, that's I don't own a Solo. I'm going to run over to Best Buy and buy one at $399.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about doing it actually myself when I saw that online. I was thinking, wow, there's probably not going to be very many of those left. But I didn't want to. I already have a GoPro, but I didn't want to have to buy the gimbal as well. But and I already have a 3 that I use for a little bit. But yeah, I don't think that's going to be much of a threat. I think people who are going to buy at that price range probably weren't going to move up to buy a $1,000 Karma or Mavic. Anyways, I think the Mavic's going to be more of a threat to it. But I still think there's going to be a built-in market for Karma, because there's a lot of GoPro honks. There's a lot of people who love GoPro. And if you talk to the people who actually do videography, they will tell you that they like the option of being able to, because camera technology changes, you know, on a whim. It's, you know, weekly, monthly. So they want to be able to have that upgrade. I think that gives a little bit of leg up. But the fact that it came with no follow me, no obstacle avoidance, I think that puts it at a disadvantage. And so I think people who like GoPro stuff will probably, and want a drone, will probably take Karma. But I think more so people who want drones that can take pictures, or they're more interested in the drone than the camera, they're going to buy the Mavic. And I think that's where more of your market share is going to be. And again, it remains to be seen, but I don't think Karma is going to do any kind of DJI, you know, no death to DJI from Karma. It's just it'll have its little niche for the GoPro lovers, and that'll be about it.
Yeah, I had talked to them you know, when they were going to launch the first time. And you know, I'd talked to the marketing team. I mean, they wanted to advertise. I probably shot myself in the foot telling them, you know, what I thought. But, you know, it's an accessory, as I see it, for the GoPro. You know, it's been a long time coming. I think the price point's way too high. I mean, you know, $599 tops, I think, as far as the price is concerned on it. I do agree with you that you'll have some GoPro people that will buy it. But even listening to the guy that owns the company and is talking about the launch, you know, oh, you can't, you know, it gets mundane to fly drones. You can't fly them anywhere. And the stick is a ground drone. It's like, you know, I could tell in people's faces when they're saying stuff and they're not even buying it, you know. The ground drone? What are you talking about, the ground drone? So, you know, we'll see what happens. The other thing is, Gary says, you know, that's the drone from 2 years ago.
Right.
You look at where Mavic is and the design. And that's another thing, even with DJI, their design, and even the Chinese, the way that their design is working and their IP, their homegrown IP. I think people still discount the Chinese. I think they're fools. These people are not over here clowning around, and we see it. And we see what works.
No, their R&D is top notch. They've shown that from the start. DJI has made so many, you know, great moves on my from my perspective, not just in the manufacturing and in the design and R&D, but in the marketing. And you know, them telling GoPro to pound sand because GoPro wanted more profits from the GoPro DJI, you know, partnership that they were trying to build to have those cameras on there was GoPro's downfall. They could have made a mint from that. I think about how much more income they would have had from all their cameras being on all the DJI drones that they had. So that was a genius move, making their own cameras. Go ahead.
I think, you know, this is a big problem, and I don't think this is only in the drone sphere. I think this is a technology sphere. You know, I'm out here in Northern California, and I'm in Sacramento, so I think I can keep my feet on the ground. I'm not directly in the Silicon Valley ecosystem, but these guys are out of control. I mean, I was at this other Orange Pillsbury VC, and these people, I understand technology, okay? I understand what's tangible. I understand what's fantasy. And it used to be maybe they were grasping 20% of reality. They've moved into about 10%. Now we're moved right on to 5G, AI, you know. And it's like, when you're talking about AI, what are you talking about over here, you know? What they're really talking about is pre-programmed. They're not talking about self-learning, self-aware things.
Right, right.
You know, I did a panel at the SVIEF thing about AI and Asimov's laws of robotics, which I think are just some nostalgic throwback, because as all of this stuff comes into, let's say, the real world, there are issues. So, I think you got a lot of people at these companies, and they're blowing smoke and other yes men. I notice out here, if you say anything derogatory about Google, Amazon, Facebook, any of the big, oh, you're like a heretic. And they keep all of the... Yeah, and they keep all of the things kind of under wraps that, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know who they think they're. Well, I guess they're BSing a lot of folks, but, you know, Facebook drone crashed on landing. They didn't come out and go, hey, you know what, it crashed. Google car, you know, crashes, and somebody gets a picture on it on their cell phone. Nobody's talking about it. You have to say, okay, this stuff is really hard. It is hard to do. This is hard, but let's be realistic. You know, I think they need some more reality and less yes men, or there's going to be some serious problems in Silicon Valley and with tech. I think we're gonna have another, I don't want to call it like a dot bomb, but I think the gear's going to either grind or slip. What do you think?
I agree. First of all, I wanted to say that, you know, you're exactly right. Karma is an accessory. I mean, GoPro's a camera company, and they made a drone to fly cameras. DJI is a drone company, that's the big difference. With regards to technology, that's absolutely the truth. You can see that by all the venture capital going into crazy stuff, and all the people who are just now trying to get into drones are going to be going to be pushed out, and many, many of the drone makers that we see now, the manufacturers, are not going to be around in a few years. It's going to be just like what happened with cell phones. You remember how many cell phone manufacturers there used to be, and now how many are there? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Google just released their phone. There's maybe, what, four that are really a player outside of China. So, I mean, that's just going to, at least on the consumer side, that's going to happen. I think you're going to still have probably have quite a few niche drones that do things that other drones don't, that have carved out a niche and made a name for themselves doing something well, and people are comfortable with that, you know, like your Arion Labs and your, you know, Intel, Ascending Technologies by default with Intel, those kinds of, you know, I mean, look at all the companies that have been doing the inspection services for oil and gas and other things. What do they use? They all use the Falcon 8s, and there's a reason for that. So those that's where you're going to survive. But to me, you're seeing a lot of consolidation. You're going to see more. You're going to see a lot of partnerships because these drone companies don't want to be a one-trick pony like we talked about before. They want just to be able to send. I think that's we hadn't talked about it yet, but I think that's why Del Air Tech picked up Trimble's UAV business so they could have more of a product line to sell their clients. And, you know, Trimble's not really a drone company. They're a geospatial company, so I don't think they had a problem getting rid of it. I think they just wanted to have that for their customers. So now they decided, let's concentrate on the geospatial stuff and partner with the drone people and let the drone people be drone people, you know. So you're trying to let the people who understand the business maintain that part of the business.
Well, the other thing is, you know, I mean, I knew the woman that was in charge of that. You know, they did get into it. I mean, you know, Trimble is a huge company. Huge company. And I think the other thing that you're starting to see, because this was confirmed, I talked to another guy at SVIEF from Cisco, you know, and the same thing. If we are going to spend money on something, it has to have a return on investment. It has to make money. I'm like, oh, my God. There's refreshing thinking. Somebody's talking about actually making money. Well, not only does it have to make money, but if I put $10 into pot A, is it going to return as much if I put that $10 into pot P
somewhere
B
else?
Or C?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the play with Trimble. Okay, it works. It's good. But you know what? We're killing it over here. We're not really making the money on this that we are on this. And we don't need it.
Right.
It reminds me of the play that Evergreen made. I don't know if you remember that, but Evergreen had a bunch of Scan Eagles, and they were actually working for Shell up there in 2008 up off of the Arctic Shelf, which was I was calling that the Shell game. You know, people talk about commercial use of drones. It was going on back then. You just had to know the right folks to make that happen. But they realized they couldn't make any money, and they sold it off to VT Group, you know, and VT Group was like, oh, we scored. We're getting all these, you know, getting a good deal on these drones. Well, you know, where that went.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a different play like that. The other thing is, you know, you did talk about some of the other companies, and, you know, the pivoting is starting to get out of control. I mean, these people are like, you know, first they were groping around in the dark, and I call these people conjecture merchants. We're talking about what was going to happen and what wasn't going to happen and yada, yada. I wrote back in 2010 what was going to happen, and that's pretty much what we got. And so now they're like, oh, we've got to find some relevance. We got to find something. We have customers. Well, you know what? In my book, customers pay. If they're not paying, they're not really customers. And I think these people are pivoting and looking for, you know, something, grasping at straws. And there's just no revenue, man. They're just on VC money. I mean, when the rule came out, I saw some of these companies, their relevance, like a light switch, was off. You know, I didn't get where people invested in this stuff. You want to add something to that, or you think I'm out there in left field? What do you think?
Well, I really see the potential in the services. I don't see a whole lot of – I mean, and I think that's – going back to Trimble, I kind of think that's why they were – I mean, they acquired Gatewing in the first place. That wasn't something that they came up with. Mm-hmm. So they transitioned that into the UX5. And I think – what exactly what you said is happened is that they understood that, you know, hey, we make the software that does, you know, the geospatial type of, you know, I mean, Trimble has, like you said, it's a huge company. They can concentrate on the software and sell that to everybody instead of trying to compete with selling drones in a market where there's a bunch of other drones. There's not a whole lot of other companies that do what they do on the geospatial side. So, yes, you're going to get, I think you're going to get more for your $10 in that software pot than you're going to in a hardware pot. So let the hardware companies do the hardware. And so, I mean, and that's the smart thing to do is if you're going to try and maintain your relevance as a hardware company, you can't, like Dell Air Tech, all they had was fixed wing. You can't just have fixed wing and cater to all the customers that you may have coming knocking at your door. You say, oh, well, we don't have that multi-rotor capability, sorry. Oh, we'll go somewhere else. So what you said is why what we're seeing is happening with all the consolidations there. Everybody's trying to make some sort of full stack end-to-end service so that they can, so when a customer comes to them, they can say, oh, we can do that, instead of all we have are drones, all we have are sensors, all we have is a cloud computing capability, you know, like a drone deploy. All these companies are partnering together to try and offer, you know, an end-to-end service. And I think it's finally, but why that's happening is because they're seeing that's where the money's going to be, is in the services. Because the company...
Go ahead. Well, I just think that, you know, the other problem with that, though, is we go back to augmenting already existing businesses. You know, here's where I see it. You know, the drone part of it, especially the $1,000, there's a few things that are going to happen. You hit on that with the liability, right? So what happened in the micro arc is that the FAA, in my estimation, was very... let's say, you know, well, they either lucked out or they were calculating when they pushed the self-certification off on the OEMs. And I do not believe that the OEMs have any idea where they're going with that one. So, you know, when the liability thing comes out later and you have like a hobby-grade drone and it crashes on someone, I mean, it's the same deal with Amazon. I got to tell you. You know, first time I saw Amazon, and I'm not ripping on Amazon. I'm just going to say that when I saw the Prime Air, I did a thing for, I don't know, it was Fox News Financial or whatever. Not ready for prime time, you know. There's
nowhere
no
near.
Guards on it. It just it doesn't look like an aircraft. And, they, you know, the thing is they're making they go and talk to aviation people and go, yeah, this is our aircraft, even the new iteration. You know, it looks like some 70s Formula One racer. It doesn't look like an aircraft. It doesn't fly like an aircraft. You're just embarrassing yourself. And then they're like, oh, best equipped, best served. Okay, you know, Billy Badass, you're that badass. You got all that money. Let's see you fly with the big iron. Come on. You know, let's, where's the engineering? Where's the, you know, you have the money. So I think these guys are playing games with themselves, or honestly, because the first time, and I've asked them about it, okay, so you can come into the backyard, you know, you got, how's it going to avoid, oh, it'll be like a bird, and it'll avoid, you know, Susie. Well, what about Billy and Johnny? You know, it doesn't hit her. I mean, it's just, it's not realistic, man. For what, Lonesome Dove DVDs, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, to me, the delivery space, at least the consumer delivery, I don't see how the numbers work out. And there's a lot more things that we have to deal with than just operating drones. I mean, if you're operating a drone to do an inspection or to do some mapping or something, you fly it overhead, and you know, really, a lot of those jobs, 80% of that work is up front in the planning, you know, making the flight plan, figuring out where you're going to take the pictures, you know, how much overlap you're going to use, whatever it is, that's all up front. And then you know, a lot of times you just take it off and fly the mission, and it comes back and you have your information. That's much different than flying a long distance and then figuring out how you have to what are you going to do if the weather's bad? What are you going to do if, there's a temporary flight restriction. Is that information automatically going to be fed into the drone so it goes around there? What if it doesn't have the legs to get there now? There's how are you going to deal with the distribution centers? You know, are you going to how much is it going to cost to alter all those so that you can fly drones in and out. There's just so many more obstacles that you have to overcome. And then after all that, what you talked about, how are you going to deliver? Are you going to have a central delivery location? Are the drones going to be protected when they place the packages in there? I mean, seriously, if you have a delivery to the same place and your drone can only deliver one package at a time because of the weight restriction, are you going to really send it there and then go all the way back to the distribution center and bring another one back to the same exact place? That's not going to be efficient. So there's a lot to be worked out there. And to me, I saw an article that said it the other day that said it exactly right. It's not the last mile that's an issue. It's the last 50 feet that's an issue.
Right, I agree with that. And the thing is with that is I'm not beating them up because I do think it's technically feasible. Right now,
sure,
the
yeah.
business model is, you know, one guy in a FedEx truck, one driver with one package in the back, okay? And we're not talking about, you know, because I'm, well, you know, it's an apple to oranges because the truck costs this and blah, blah, blah. Well, all the infrastructure for the drone, by the time you're said and done, control station, certification, software certification, and all the rest of that stuff, I think it's going to be cheaper for the kid on the bike. And that's another thing. We didn't even get into that. And we are running long. And you know what? We'll just go long because I don't care. A lot of people beat me up.
Me neither.
Oh, you know, anything over 30 minutes is too long. Well, turn it off. No, it's too
That's right.
good.
Okay. You can press
yeah,
stop.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. Listen later, you know, mow the lawn. I don't know. But it's the same deal with, you know, okay, I do want to, that one, I think it is doable. But I still think it's embarrassing from a technology, you know, I was at the Silicon Valley Robotics Block Party and talked to some of the people from the Google thing before they got, you know, they had the purge over there. And just said, you know, candy bar on a string is not a moonshot. I'm sorry, it's just not. You know, and then they were like, all right, Hotshot, tell us how to do it. I go, I don't know. Drop a catcher's mitt first. You know, the woman from SRI was she was doubled over laughing, you know. And oh, come on, tell her, you know, you really, like, yeah, what? I'm going to wheel out the ore cart, the gold for you for nothing? Get out of here. What are you, nuts? You know, you guys got more money than God. You have talent, you know, supposedly all the rest of this stuff. Anyway, just to get back to me when you have something that's credible and you want to wow me like I wrote in the article, something that's certifiable, not just the idea certifiable, but, you know, I want to see software and hardware that you can certify. I mean, all the DOD guys are going there.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and a few years ago I was talking to the over there at Airware. I said, hey, DO-178 variants, what do you think of that? What's that?
They had no idea what you're talking about, did they? Yeah.
At all. And I said, you know, software certification, what's that? Well, for your autopilot software. I asked, I won't name the company, but I asked one of the companies. I said, you know what that means, you know? And I said, well, now, what does that mean? And I said, well, basically, the certification isn't development testing or anything else. The certification is, you know, averages about $100 a line. How many lines of code you got? Four very long ones, the guy said, which I thought was a very creative answer for software. But, you know, that is what Amazon's up against. That's what Google's up against,
yeah.
You know, to get that going. So, you know, I beat those guys up, and I'm sure that they already all love me because I already know all those guys. But, you know, hey, man, you know, I tell them, you know, maybe this passes with the kiddies and people think it's great and they all love it, but this is the reality of the situation, you know, and it's like the picture thing. If you don't like the picture, maybe you got to bring me a prettier model. I don't know. But
yeah,
the other thing I want to – Well, go ahead. I should let you
start. I was going to say we're nowhere near the the end of what we need to do with regard to a bunch of things flying together in a low altitude airspace. I mean, people aren't thinking about what you're talking about, certification, and what if it comes down to, oh, in order to get insurance, your aircraft has to have not just certification for the software, but you know, flying certification, you know, the testing and saying, well, if it does this, it has to do that, especially if you're going to fly over people, you know, go ahead.
Well, just think of it. Okay. Let's just think about this. You're a numbers guy. Okay. Back of the envelope, back of the napkin, how many of these sorties are you going to have a day to make the Amazon thing work around the country? Hundreds of thousands? A million? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, you know, you think that's probably something that's going to be right. Okay. So
sure.
Then you say, okay, so now we're the liability part. You know, I'm biking down the street with my GoPro on my head and, you know, an Amazon drone smacks me in the face. You know, the liability on that, whoa, it said Amazon on the side. No, you know, I'll never be able to work again and my descendants will never be able to work again and on and on and on.
Right.
And a couple of big lawsuits in the news. I don't think the public's going to tolerate these things falling out of the sky. I think that's a pipe dream.
Well, and I've said it before, the real winners over the next 5 to 10 years will probably be the insurers and the lawyers.
Well, don't they, though? And I used to say that, you know, the cornerstone of any business is finance and insurance, you know, and insurance is really driving the bus, you know. The only thing I think these guys have going for them now, and I've said this before, aviation insurance, right? Like if you got a 787 or, you know, 757 or whatever, and you sneeze on it wrong, it's $1 million worth of damage.
Yeah.
Know? That's just the way it is. So now the drone thing, you insure the drone and there's $5,000 worth of equipment damage, you're like, you know, here, let me just go hit the couch cushions and I'll get you a check, you know. It's nothing. But that's a different story when you're talking about, you know, companies like, you know, Amazon, Google, Verizon, Ericsson, whoever else. One of those drones crashes into somebody and it's going to be multi-million dollar lawsuit. You know,
easily.
And
yep.
And again, when these guys with the micro arc said, yeah, we'll do self-certification. What the hell does that mean? And then we're going to come back and they're going to go, the FAA is going to go, wow, yeah. You guys self-certified, have a nice day, you know, and they got nothing to, they don't have a leg to stand on and they're going down. So whatever, you know, do whatever you want to do.
Well, that,
and I don't
then
wanna,
if,
go ahead.
I was going to say, if too many of those kinds of things happen, then you have the regulators come back and say, oh, now we're going to have to make you have some sort of airworthiness certification before you can fly whatever it is you want to fly for this thing or that thing. And now your costs go up, your return on investment goes down, and it throws the entire business model into a tailspin or a possible tailspin because now you don't know what the real costs are again.
Well, and that's exactly where it's going. You know, you're going as soon as the few first lawsuits come in. I mean, that's the thing. Even with the 107, people are like, "Oh gosh, it's so hard." And blah blah blah. It's not hard. It's really very easy. It's very liberal. It's more liberal than I could have dreamed was going to happen. And we're there. You know, and
yeah.
I don't believe that. And they're going to tighten it up. Is what they're going to do. They're going to have to tighten it up if accidents start happening. So.
Well, Australia's already in the mix.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, Australia's already in the middle of trying, looking at that. They're re-looking at their rules because of all the complaints that they're having from pilots and, you know, the industry as a whole. So I don't know what's going to come out of that, but
I think they're going to revisit this, you know. They will. It will be.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just too many parallels. And then, you know, the other thing is that people are like, oh, it's stifling innovation. And they're over there in Europe talking about how we're so far ahead of them now that innovation stifled over there. You know, here in the United States, these guys, all of the best and brightest have been doing whatever they wanted to do. All of the companies that people hear about now, you know, oh, this is a success story and they're working and they're selling and blah, blah, blah. They just did whatever they wanted to do without any regard for the FAA. So the innovation that we have today is what the best and brightest could develop on their own. And, you know, like what you got is what you got because nobody really cared because there was no enforcement or very little enforcement. So that's one part of it. Now I want to talk about the medical delivery stuff, which is, I think, you know, there was a story today, you know, zip lines in Rwanda and yada, yada, yada. You know, that's great. I think it's great and everything else. I mean, again, I was probably one of the first people to talk to Matternet. I've talked to a lot of these companies first off, and you know, I went there, and the first thing they had was the 3D robotics drone. And they, you know, they were like, yeah, we're going to do medical deliveries. Like, oh, that's a great idea. But you're not going to use this, are you? And I said, well, you know, yeah. And I said, well, if you're going to deal with pharmaceutical companies, you're going to have to deliver, man, 99.9999999% of the time. Because when Nanook doesn't get her insulin for her diabetes and she dies because you didn't make it, you're going to get sued. You know, and it's going to be a black eye, and then nobody's going to really want to work with you.
Right.
And, of course, I said, you know, you're going to want to do certification or, you know, there were ways to get, you know, some sort of equivalent level of certification. Oh, we already have $10 million in the bank, you know, and it wasn't realistic. The other deal, oh, well, we can only, our business model is so many cents a kilometer, you know, blah, 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 which when I went to this other thing in at Orange Pillsbury, you know, one of the women from Singularity University started it up. I go, you know, the business model was what? Matched against a Chinese or a kid on a Chinese motorcycle? You know, because that's how they do it now. And she even admitted, well, in some cases, it's a kid with a donkey. You know, I mean, how are you going to beat a kid with a donkey?
Exactly right.
So,
exactly,
you know,
right.
There's issues. And then, you know, Zipline looks good. I like Zipline. But I look at Zipline and I go, man, you know, you've got all of the issues that Shadow has, you know, the Shadow system. It's this big footprint, the infrastructure, all the people. This is not going to be cheaper. And the only way it's going to really work is we don't count all of the money that Bill and Melinda Gates threw into it. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I guess the only thing at that point would be, and again, there's a reason why you see them testing this over in Africa and you don't see a whole lot of it here, is you need it over there because of the infrastructure and the speed. So I think they're probably willing to forego a little bit of the cost for speed, but someone's got to pay for that. It's not going to be like a huge windfall of profit. It's going to be people wanting to donate for, you know, the better good of, you know, trying to save lives over there, trying to keep people, as many people from dying because they get their medicine faster. But it's by no means going to be a business model for a big profit-making venture.
No. And I mean, it's a great effort, and I like the idea, you know, and all the rest of that. I really do. I think it's good. But the thing is, the other thing I find is a lot of these ventures go to countries where, like here in the United States, you know, a life is worth $1 million, and you move on to different developing countries in the world or whatever, lives are not worth that much. So, you know, they go someplace where they can make the numbers work, which is fine. You know, I'm all good with that, too. I still think we have a ways to go on that one. I do commend their efforts, and I think it's nice that people are investing in this, saving lives and all the rest of that stuff. I just, you know, I don't, is it like trying to make a solution that's not really needed? I mean, even the kid on a motorcycle, he could carry a passenger that could take blood samples or do inoculations, you know? The only good thing I heard somebody say, well, he might have to climb a mountain. Okay, well, how often does he have to climb a mountain? You know.
Well, I mean, I do think it's the infrastructure problem is insurmountable. I don't even know if a kid on a motorcycle can do it. It just depends on where you're at. But hopefully they're at least doing some sort of they're treating it as testing, too, to try and work out the bugs for something that if they're going to do in a more business-like fashion, that they're using those deliveries to find out what they can and can't do, or what, you know, what the capabilities are, and keeping track of that. So at least they get, you know, kind of like what the FAA sites were supposed to do.
Well, you know, I mean, the other thing is that, you know, even in the when I was working with the military, you know, they already had a system that could deliver blood, which is kind of a difficult thing. I mean, you can't you know, blood can't take a lot of shocks, or it, you know, there's, it starts to separate and things like that. I think another thing that we had going on here is everyone, because it was illegal, was operating in silos and working on their own, you know, and a lot of these projects withered on the vine. Well, you know, now that it's all open, I think it's going to be a very interesting 6 to 12 months. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think this is going to be the next 6 to 12 months is going to, I think, maybe a little bit longer, maybe 6 to 18 months, 2 years. But in the near future, we're going to see a lot more of a structure of how everything's going to going to play out, because I think by then, you know, just like we keep seeing all these follow me drones or selfie drones, as you like to call them, going by the wayside because they couldn't meet the demand, or they couldn't meet the promises that they did, you know, with all the, you know, I can't name them all, but you know, there's three or four of them. What, Lily was one, right? And you know, there's a few others.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see that same kind of thing with all these companies partnering up, and the cream's going to rise to the top, and a lot of the companies that we talk about today aren't going to be around. There's already some companies that came out with big fanfare and just died off because there's just, like you say, there's not the customers. It's something that the entire market is not defined, and it's going to take another while to do more research. I think both of the reports that I put out basically said it, over the next year or two of testing of different capabilities, whether it's precision agriculture or the inspections or, you know, any of those kind of commercial operations, to find out what really works and what really is cost saving and what's not, what's saving lives, what's saving money, and where are you going to get your return on investment. Once all those things are, more sorted out, then we'll see the market start to form in a more predictable fashion, I think.
I agree with that. And, you know, the one thing I do like to give people a little bit of insight. I think really what's going to happen for the drone to really be something that's good, and I've told this to some of the other folks that make apps and all the rest of that, is really where I think the money is going to be is, again, in the software that can identify anomalies. And we'll come up with a solution or a mitigator and email it to somebody. And the example I give, a few years ago at the expo, I had a guy come. He's got a master's degree in, you know, crop stress, remote sensing for drought conditions, okay? He says, you go fly, you know, a field or whatever. He could spend 40 hours analyzing and reporting on what's going on. Okay, fair enough. Now, you can do the numbers real quick, dude, with a master's degree, carry the two thousands of dollars worth of work, okay? So really what needs to, you really want to kill it, come up with a software that can discover these anomalies and give people something that's actionable in a couple of paragraphs that's in their mailbox. Boom, boom, boom. And then they can pick up the phone, make a call, and have somebody, let's say, mitigate that situation. What do you think?
Yeah, basically, and that's, to me, that's automation. I don't think of automation just in the term of the drone being automated itself, but in the terms of once the drone is flying on an automated fashion, automatically detecting something and automatically processing it and disseminating the result of whatever it is that it's looking for. So I do agree. The military has obviously been working on that for years and years, and they're still working on it. I mean, and so it may be more further down the road than the military, and it may come out, you know, on the commercial side. It's going to have to be cheaper, obviously, than the stuff that the military does. But they're still working on that, trying to figure out, hey, how do we sift through all this information and focus on what it is we really want to see. And you're right. Whoever makes that better mousetrap there's gonna be some big money there.
Right. Well, and you know, hey, I'm not. You know, I'll be the first to say, not this stuff is hard, man. You know, and that is a lofty goal. But that's when you're talking about, you know, what I would call regulatory grade data. When the drone can go mm-hmm. out there, collect this, and, you know, it can get processed in a secure cloud location. That's the other deal. The cloud, you know, it's not a magical place. Someplace secure, you know, and I'm not going to disparage anybody's cloud because people yell at me about that too. But anyway, it's got to be somewhere. And then, like I said, you know, hey, the data comes back and we can do that. You got something that you can use to indemnify yourself against lawsuits and regulatory fines and whatnot. There's the goose that laid the golden egg. And it's not, and that's another thing, this is converging technologies. When I talk about unmanned technologies, it's not just the flying stuff, but under the water, on the roads,
mm-hmm.
wherever you're collecting data, the satellites, CubeSats, wherever you're getting it.
Yeah, and being able to integrate that into existing systems that use other maybe unattended sensors or whatever. It's going to be it's basically a big data thing. It's a big data, and then taking that big data and getting information, you know, actual information, like you said, that's useful in an automated fashion.
Exactly, and then that's when you're talking about the gold rush.
Mm-hmm.
That's my estimation. So we have a little ways to go. It's going to be hard, but I'm not. I hope it wasn't too Debbie Downer, but I think that you have to peel back the veneer, and I think that people. I know a lot of people appreciate it. I get emails all the time and say, hey, you just saved me, tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever, just listening to this program. So that's what you get here. But
yep.
I'm glad we had a chance to get you on, Mike. Do you have a website where people can talk about or look at some of these forecasts that you were talking about?
Well, our website is www.frost.com, but the best thing to do if you want to talk about something particular, because our company does research in just about every area, so healthcare, auto and transportation, measurements and instrumentation, you name it, food and beverage. So if you want to focus on the stuff that I do, it's probably best just to email me. And my email is my name, michael.blades@frost.com, or they can get a hold of you and you can give them my information. I have no problem with that, and I'm always happy to talk to people about the industry. Any questions I can help with them, it helps me too, just to find out what's going on in the pits, in the trenches.
Yeah, well, there's, that's one thing that I'm always into is sharing ideas, sharing information. And I do, we like to have quality people on that kind of know what they're talking about. I mean, we didn't even get into the fantasy football numbers of the, a lot of the, these forecasts that I think were detrimental and are going to prove to be really detrimental to this industry. Mark my words on that one. But that could be a podcast for another time. We can shift through the minutiae on that one. But anyway, thanks for being on, Mike. I had a great conversation. I enjoyed what we were talking about, and I will, I guess, talk to you either on the Twitter or somewhere in the future, sir.
Yeah. I'll be ready whenever you want me back. Patrick, thanks for having me on, man.
All right. Have a good day.
All right. You too.